see. I think we're yeah, we should be live. That's Yahoo. Hello everyone, and hi Mike. Well, welcome to back to my channel here. For those of you who don't know Mike, he's from Mike Collins from Wandering Wolf. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Mike?
Yes, sir. Good to be back, man. Good to connect with you. I am Mike with Wandering Wolf Productions. Do YouTube, travel a lot. I think we're going to get into it today. That's what I heard.
Yeah, we're getting into it. Yeah, buddy. So you've got a lot of you've been doing a lot of research over the years. I mean, you've been to pretty much every place. I was blown away when we were in Sedona, and even you've been more places than Graham Hancock had. Even you would start listing places, and he's like, "I hadn't been there," and you're like, "Well, I have."
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to give him a run for his money, because there's places that he's definitely been that I haven't been yet. But I'm working on checking off the list. Jimmy was encouraging me to really make that kind of part of my spiel. It's something like 200 plus sites, but I think it's been over 300. But yeah, I try to get around the world everywhere, all over, wherever I can go, I'm down to go. So,
I've seen a lot of your videos that have that are really interesting sites that I'd never even heard of before. Certainly hadn't seen. And like when I go through your videos, a lot of times I'm just like, "Where the hell is that? Oh my god, never even seen that." And then I get 20,000 views and then forgotten about. I'm just like, "Wow, man, so many of those places you dug up like that."
Yeah, and the messed up thing is I'm sitting on a mountain of content because I am horrible with my footage and editing and different stuff like that, and I'm not very tech savvy. But the good news is Sammy, who you've met, came on board, is an absolute total badass. And she's been knocking out videos for me. And then Kay just joined me, and we'll be doing live streams here pretty soon. And so I've got people helping me now. So I'm looking, people may be getting sick of me in the near future as I start a bunch of content.
Well, that's good. That's a good problem to have, though.
Yeah.
Dave Lee is asking if you can see the chat.
Can I? Oh, yes. Now I can.
Yeah, send him the flip off emoji there, Lee. Thank you, Tammy. Hi, Mava, and hey there, Charles, with no Xavier. Charles will correct you if you pronounce Dr. Danny Hillman Naughty Wajawa's name wrong, which I just did, so he'll be correcting me here shortly. He's good.
Yeah.
Like that.
My friend Megan's out there working with Danny. We were just traveling together through Guatemala, and she's out there helping them assist with doing excavations right now at Ganang Padang, which is really exciting. So they're actually they've secured funding. They're doing digs out there at Ganang Padang, scans, LIDAR, and all sorts of stuff, and posting about it daily. You can follow her at Prehistoric Paradox. She's dropping content daily on her stuff going on there. I think they're just now getting into full swing of doing work up there, but that's exciting to know that there's stuff going on and work out there at that really interesting site, which I need to go visit. That's another one that I haven't hit yet.
So, oh yeah. That's definitely an interesting one. It's frustrating how the waters get so muddy anytime a site gets fought over. It's like as soon as the site becomes a point of contention, it's like all of a sudden all the stuff gets thrown in the air, and what seemed like a clear picture before becomes all dusty and hazy, and now you don't even know if the rocks were really placed by the ancients, as you've been so kind to point out to the community. That's usually the case.
Yeah, and I didn't start all this to be that guy. I just happen to be the guy with a lot of the information to be able to share, because I've traveled to so many sites, and it was something I couldn't really ignore anymore was how these sites are being handled around the world. I started all this because I was blown away and just completely inspired by, Sacsayhuaman was my first site that I ever visited. And I was just absolutely blown away by that and inspired. Really led me on this path, changing my life and doing what I do now. But But after having visited so many sites, piecing together some of the, you know, you get a look behind the curtain and it's not always pretty. And sharing that this past year kind of put me in the crosshairs with the archaeological community, which obviously you're aware of. You deal with on a daily basis. You and Jimmy really attacked that stuff head on online. But it was kind of new for me. And so, you know, it took me a good half of the year to kind of get used to that before I'm just like, these guys, most of the guys that are yelling out online, these guys, I don't even know. It's just, well, it's just garbage, man.
You know, I saw a thing not too long ago where they'd done a poll and they asked left wingers what they thought about right wingers. And they had right wingers pegged at around 30% of them as millionaires. And their actual number is like 6%. And then they asked right wingers what they thought about left wingers. And they had them at like 40% transgender or gay, which the actual number is like 8-12%. Everybody's got boogeymen that they look at, that they're just this fake person that they're fighting with, this effigy of the own mental demons, even their own worst case scenario of what the other guy is. And you wandered yourself into the middle of that by saying, hey man, this is all fucked up. You guys should let us know when you put the rocks back up there. And then they're just like, now you're one of us. And you'll never not be now, man. You're about 30 seconds from white supremacy. You know that, right?
I haven't been called a racist yet, and I'm actually surprised. So, you know, we'll see. It's coming eventually. But if I keep saying anything that you know, kind of exposes any of this, and just to be clear to your audience, what I've been exposing is basically just that these sites around the world, all the most famous sites that you know, unfortunately, this is where I become a real bummer for people, and I apologize for that. But most of these sites are all reconstructed. So, you know, for example, I just got back from Guatemala, Tikal, and these temples down there that look amazing, and you can climb up and do things on. They're all reconstructed. That's all modern concrete on the exterior. So the interior of it might be original. You know, when you look at these old pictures and they look like mounds of dirt, Chichen Itza is a perfect example. Teotihuacan, these types of places, you know, all of that original structure that was found is now covered with concrete. Teotihuacan, that's probably thousands of tons of concrete. That's what that is. When you look at the pictures of the modern Teotihuacan, it's all concrete. Chichen Itza, it's all concrete. You know, they're all reconstructed. And you know, I dropped a video. It was just a short on my socials of exploring around there at Tikal and showing you the process. There's temples there under construction right now. And you can see the scaffolding where they're stacking the rocks. And then you go back behind the temple and that's where they mix the concrete. And then they take the big blocks and cut them up back there and they put the base there. And then it's all right there. So this is not, you know, I don't even know what the archaeologists are arguing with us about when we are talking about these topics, because we've exposed it over and over again. And so that's where a lot of the frustration comes from when we're talking about stuff that's been so big in the public eye, like Göbekli Tepe. That's the concern. They're paving over sites at Göbekli Tepe. There's a shop right at the very top and a big circle so that they can, you know, bus people up and you don't have to walk all the way up there. There's a full road going up to the site. And we've talked about this before, that roofing system, that's a major construction project. So those beams go directly into the site, which means they would have had to drill down for the weight of that roof, mm-hmm. probably at least 20 feet, which we documented at Karahan Tepe, because they haven't built the roof, but they've started building the base and the structure and the holes for that. They went down 20 feet. So I have to assume the roof for Göbekli Tepe is bigger than the one they have planned for Karahan Tepe. So the holes have to be deep enough to support that, the weight of that. And this is a major construction project. You're talking about, they would have had to have cranes come up there to hold these poles, to lift them and guide them in after you had workers crawling all over the site, digging down into there. So when they start talking about how these online archaeologists start talking about how their, you know, vested interest is in protecting the site, I'm sorry, but I don't see that. And I don't listen to what they say anymore. I just look at the results, and the results speak for themselves. You're talking about major construction projects on ancient sites before they've been excavated, and they're okay with on average 5 to 20% excavating a site. And that is what we're basing our collective understanding of history on around the world, 5 to 10%. So when they act like they know what they're talking about with our past, it's at most, you have a 5 to 10, 20% understanding of what's going on in our past, because you haven't, and they have no plans to excavate fully a site like Göbekli Tepe. And the issue here, and I'm going off on a rant, but the issue here is money. It's tourism. So, you know, heritage tourism, which is what this is, these ancient sites around the world, sits somewhere over $500 billion a year worldwide. That's expected to get up to about $800 million worldwide in the next 7 or 8 years. And in less than 10 years, it'll be $1 trillion a year industry worldwide.
Wow.
So if you think money isn't influencing the decisions being made at these sites around the world, I think you're just very naive to assume that. And that's the position that they're taking, is that they're prioritizing our history at places like Göbekli Tepe, when guys like Dr. Lee Clare are talking and arguing with people online. When really, you know, in all fairness, I think we might be being too hard on the archaeologists, because honestly, I don't think they're in charge of shit.
Probably not. I mean, you know, we have here in the States, things are a little bit different, because we're not, you know, if you go to a famous tourist attraction here, you might find a couple of people, you know, trying to hustle you like they do outside of the pyramids of Egypt. But, yeah, you know, that's more of a downtown in the big cities kind of thing here in the States. You don't find it around archaeological sites, but you go to Egypt or to Turkey or to some place where that archaeological site is a major source of bringing in people from these richer countries, you know, it's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, how valuable is your past when your kids are starving? You know, fuck my past, feed my kid. So that's the attitude that a lot of these countries are going to take, and we're going to have a hard time fathoming, especially the more white-collar somebody gets, the less they've ever been had to do without. They're not going to really understand that mentality, how desperate people can actually get in a situation like that. And so, you know, there is the East Wenatchee Clovis site that was a sticking point right before the whole Kennewick Man was found up here in Washington. And the guy that the land was on, he wanted to make it a museum. He was working with local archaeologists that knew the tribes, and they were all trying to navigate it. He thought they were taking too long, so he brought in an archaeologist from New York. The archaeologist came in and was like, he pissed off all the tribes, and the tribes shut the site down. But the push was the tribes wanted to honor the site, and the landowner wanted to make money off of it. And the government was perfectly content with them making money off of it. It wasn't going to stop it.
Right.
So, and that's here in the States. You can only imagine, you know, if had the tribes not stepped in, then the East Wenatchee Clovis site would be a museum right now. And, you know, you can only imagine in the rest of the world where, I mean, who's going to step in Turkey? You got some indigenous people who were kicked out of Turkey 10,000 years ago. They got claimed to it like the Nagpur or something. No. So,
no, and the sites there, you know, the government of Turkey entered into that agreement. I think it was 2018 with the Doges Group, which is an international corporation that specializes in managing tourist sites for profit. And amongst the dozens and dozens of other businesses that this corporation runs around the world, right? So they have their fingers in everything. And they did something like a $15 million deal for 20-year contract to manage that site. So wow. I don't know any major corporations around the world that are doing massive projects out of the goodness of their own hearts without expecting a return on their profit. And Turkey has seen Göbekli Tepe go from something like 50,000 visitors to 500,000 visitors. They're building a resort on site at Göbekli Tepe, which will be the launch point So, you know, that'll be the launch point for all the tepee sites that they're developing out there. So you can come stay at Göbekli Tepe, eat a 5-star meal, stay at a 5-star hotel, get you a massage and a everything, and have you an experience there, and jump off every day on a bus to on guided tours to Karahan Tepe, Göbekli Tepe, Siberç, the Sanliyorfa Museum, which they've turned into a major. It's amazing. Sanliyorfa Museum is amazing, but clearly they've built that expecting a massive increase in tourism within the city. So, you know, these are, I mean, it's common sense. And look, the real argument here isn't, you know, I don't think any of us are saying that we should stop or ban tourism from happening at these sites around the world. I don't think you're saying that. I'm not saying
Of
that.
course not.
Jimmy's not saying that. There's been, you know, we have tourism at ancient sites has been going on for thousands of years. This is not a new thing. It's just how it's being handled. And it's really interesting right now because there's a clear difference in how Peru is handling their excavations at a place like Sacsayhuaman and being open and sharing it with the public versus how Turkey is doing it. You know, there's a lot of similarities between Turkey and Egypt and how they gather information and share it with the public and are transparent with people, and what seems to be the priorities versus places where in South America and Central America, where when they take pieces off site and put a new piece on there, a replica, they clearly label it replica, or they allow people to come in and film while they're working. They don't have any problem with that. I'm seeing stuff every day from the dig at Sacsayhuaman, the test hole there that they're doing down the side of the wall. There's people going up, sticking their camera down in there.
It's awesome.
That's amazing. And people are excited about it and supportive of it. So, you know.
Real quick, Hugh said hello. He's and looking forward to seeing you. Hugh Newman, you know him. You know,
Yeah.
seeing him in a minute. And I gotta say hi to J757. Thank you, my friend. And seeing anybody else that
Another
pushed it.
familiar name, Shermanator.
Yeah. No, it is, and we got a good point here that it is a tightrope walk between like allowing access to the public, and you know protecting the site, making the site visible. I honestly think that that might be some of the push for them to have at least like tentative explanations. Hey there, Timmy. Hey, Sherm. I think that's some of the push to have the tentative explanations. You know, it looks nice on a little plaque when they can say that, you know, this was built by this people in this time and blah, 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 and they use this technique. It's a lot nicer than we don't know how the fuck they did any of these things. So there might be a little bit of a push to just kind of put a quick stamp on things. But that's kind of an aside, really. That the archaeologists kind of latching onto this, like you say, it's almost like they're almost less of a factor in this than we are. It's you know, they dig up stuff and they write papers and stuff, but you know, history's already proven that, you know, Jimmy starts shaking the tree, literally the trees, and next thing you know, the trees are gone. And you know,
I mean,
then
how
it
cool is that we got there the day that they were moving? I mean, that wasn't pl nobody knew they were moving the trees that day, and we showed up and they were removing them. We were just like, oh my God.
it's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Super lucky.
Talk about what fortuitous.
Yes, but it's perfect. The way that that tree argument played out, I think honestly, it's kind of funny. I've said it a few times now. It's like you've got this discussion where, on the one end, you got a lot of guys claiming that the archaeologists are hiding information. You're lying to us about the past. You're telling us false information about history. Then we end up in an argument with them about those trees. And then 2 months later, they're lying to us about what they said 2 months ago. And it's like, dude, you're just proving your point, the point that all these guys are making, that you're fucking lie about the past. You lie about yesterday, man.
Yeah.
So
You know,
go ahead. I'm just
I
chomping on antacid. Sorry.
think it's like I said earlier, the more that I've looked at the situation and how this the similarities between all the different sites that I've been documenting around the world for years. It's this running pattern of that I'm seeing where the decisions aren't being made by the archaeologist. Ultimately, it doesn't look like. So, you know, what it appears like to me, because I've walked the site, it looks like there's areas where, for example, in Turkey, Dr. Leclerc is allowed to excavate. I don't think that they're making decisions and saying, okay, we're going to do here. No, you guys can't develop this area because we're going to be working on that area right there. The reason they're not developing or not going to excavate the whole site and try to unearth all of these other pillars is because they have other plans. Or you would. Why would you not do that? That'd be some of the biggest discoveries on a regular basis that you could have that would bring so much attention to a site like that and history. And, you know, even if they want to say, you know, these things take time and longer than some of us would like, you know, you would still start. The interest level is so high that they could be turning this amount of attention into something positive in terms of all sorts of things like funding and help to make this happen. And I wanted to point out, Hugh dropped a note in there in the chat saying Enclosure C is being reconstructed badly, possibly damaging the archaeology. You know, there's no way that you're not damaging the archaeology with the way that they're building on that site. Like I said before, these steel beams are piercing directly into the site. So it's I don't think that the concern that's being shown by the community and the way that they're being hit is unjustified. They just don't.
Well, no, it's quite the opposite. I think it's the kind of thing is. It took social media and people like yourself before this even was known, like was even noticed, and even then, like there might have been 10 people or 100 people in the past that were ringing this bell, but without a platform to put it out on. But now even Flynn Dibble can get a platform. So certainly you can, and put this out into the world and say, hey man, here's, we got a problem. And that's, like you say, the archaeologists aren't in control of it, but they sure have opinions about it all. I have to wonder how much of like with Leclerc and just the Turkish Antiquities Department or whatever the fuck they are. I have to wonder how much of this just completely caught them, like kind of like I was saying earlier, where you just kind of wandered into it. I wonder how much they feel like one day they just turned on Twitter and they were just like, oh, fuck me. What's going on here? Oh, fuck.
Absolutely. No, and it seems like there's been real time rewrites, like you were talking about how they've been handling things, you know, and then backtracking and trying to, like, you know, redo the narrative. You know, the trees are a perfect example. It's had a bit of that feel for the last year is that they're just, you know, like, oh shit, every day, you know. And yeah, playing catch up, it seems there's a lot, they're always on their heels. Even when they're attacking, they're defending.
Yeah.
So most of it's been, I've had them jumping on me a few times and I don't even pay attention to it because it's just, I don't even respond to them. Because it's just like this running record of their own hypocrisy.
Yeah.
So if you want to put that up for everybody to see, it's, you know, it's gonna, you're gonna be wrong in like 5 months the way history is playing out. So I'm fine with it. Be ugly and nasty if you want. I just leave it there. It's a great record of how these professionals are behaving online. Look, there's a difference between, you know, what you do as a YouTube creator and a content creator coming in and punching at these guys and professional academics who work for higher levels of institutions getting online and behaving the way they behave.
Yeah, I mean, that's
crazy to me that some of these guys still have jobs. After years of ugliness, of daily spewing of hate.
It's there, but they're part of a community that okays that. That's the whole deal. It's
crazy.
It's absolutely insane to me because, like all of us interested amateurs, all of us Atlantis bros or whatever you want to call us, we're interested amateurs. We're people that don't have degrees in this stuff. We're interested in this stuff. We read about it to a varying degrees of archaeology, and we've got varying degrees of pseudoscientific beliefs, you could say. But these guys are basically putting us all in the same category of being just wrong. And that's why they can't even admit that they might have got something wrong about the trees or anything else. It's their team right, we're team wrong. And so they can never, ever, ever be wrong about anything. It's hilarious, because when you don't admit that you got something wrong once in a while, eventually nobody trusts you anymore. Right. And so you got all these guys that are clearly, I mean, watch Flint's interview with Lee Clare. That's a perfect example of just how fucked up this is. Flint is leading Lee multiple times to the answers that he wants to see to try to drag him into this argument, to drag him into this one. Lee just wants to talk science. Right. And Flint ain't got no time for science. He's got a culture war to fight through big.
Yeah.
I don't fucking get it. To be honest, I do not understand how politics got intertwined with all this shit.
I genuinely actually kind of feel bad for Lee Clare, because my read with Lee, with Dr. Lee Clare, is that he actually genuinely just wants to do the work, and he's in this position of having to manage social media, public perceptions, and all this stuff, and he clearly hates it, and he clearly just wants to work and be an archaeologist, and I think that he's in a situation where he can't just do that, because he's head of the site for the, you know, archaeological work. He has to be a face for what's going on. And I think the powers that be, you know, they're not going to put their their pinstripe suit, high powered, you know, $500,000 a year executive guy out in front and do an interview or anything to talk about the site, because it gives away the game. It lets you know that that's what's going on there is about the money, right? So they push him out front. He has to handle all this stuff and interact with guys like you and Jimmy, where he just gets slammed. Brutalized. I feel bad for him, because he does. It does seem like the guy wants to just do archaeology. And I think he's in a tough spot where he's not in control of anything.
Yeah.
He's told where he can work, I think, and what he can do. And he does the best with what he's able to do. And if you put yourself in his shoes, it's got to be really frustrating to have worked your whole life to try to get a degree to do something that you love, and then find yourself as the head archaeologist at the world's most famous site, and then to just have to just deal with all of these problems and navigate, which he's clearly not that well suited to do. And, as far as the social aspect of things. So I kind of feel bad for the guy sometimes, you know, because he clearly does just want to do archaeology. And I don't think it's his fault that he's been put in this situation to be like this mouthpiece to kind of cover the trail of breadcrumbs that lead back to the groups like Dojus and the money and all this stuff being the motive behind all the decisions being made out there. Yeah. But Flint is a completely different story. That guy is, like you said, completely interested in just continually stirring up. He's a YouTuber. He's not an archaeologist anymore. He's a content creator like us who disagrees with us. He's on the other side. Clearly, his intent is to continue to grow his YouTube platform and be a public face for this side of the argument. Mm-hmm. So I don't even see a long career ahead for him as far as being a professor or teacher or anything like that, because if his platform ever gets big enough, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And it's clearly what he's the most interested in. I've never seen anybody spend that much time on Twitter. These are guys that are educators who seem like they're online talking shit 24/7. I've never seen anybody spend that much time on Twitter.
Nah, Flint is a Redditor, Evil Fandango says. He's not a YouTuber.
Redditor, there you go. Yeah, that's a whole different beast.
White Mickey Mouser's on your head. Oh, you like that? The position looks like White Mickey Mouser's. That's good. I get that lined up right there. Flint is an interesting one. It's funny how he's had such... He's not gaining any traction, right? Compared to other people in his community or our community or however you want to look at it, he doesn't get very many subscribers out of things that you would think would. excuse me, but he's him and John Hoops in particular, and there's a couple of smaller outliers, but those are the two that it's like they've got this hard on for things that disagree. It's like they think that like battling pseudoscience or pseudo archaeology or whatever is like some noble cause that's going to like change the world and stuff. And it's like we're sitting right now with just this year, a position that was railed against by both of those guys and many, many other debunkers. The whole idea that there was a connection between South America and Asia on Easter Island. That's been proven now by human and plant DNA. That's fucking, there's no question now. And for 60 years, that was considered a pseudoscientific position and was attacked by people just like these two, by these two, as a matter of fact. They both got, you can find comments that they've made about that whole mess. So it's like you would think at some point they would start to, I don't know, act more scientific about it and kind of, you know, hedge their bets a little bit and say, well, all the data currently indicates that's not what we've got, but blah, blah, blah. This is what I think. But instead they just say, nope, we can, I mean, Flint and his whole, you know, Atlantis is like a flat earth position. I mean, you can't, that's so logically bankrupt that, I mean, I can fly to the moon and take a picture of the earth and show you that it's round. Try that with Atlantis. Where's the photograph you can take to show me there's no Atlantis? Okay, fuck, man. It's just stupid.
Yeah. I, you know, I've always found it weird to think it's so crazy to think that there was like, if not a worldwide civilization, there was this massive exchanging of information and ideas and stuff worldwide at a certain point thousands of years ago. I mean, these are cultures that are building things like the pyramids and stuff, and you're telling me they're incapable of transoceanic travel, circumnavigating the world? Like, It's not even close to being out of the realm of possibility for somebody that can build structures like the pyramid to the level of precision that was done. You know, it seems like all it takes for these guys to be proven wrong again and again is just time.
Yeah.
So it's just being patient and waiting for things. And you know, there's tons of, To be fair, there's tons of archaeologists out there just doing the work, and they're not even engaging online, that are just doing the work, and hats off to them for making the discoveries. The part that sucks that I think that we're trying to expose is that at a certain point, if a site's cool enough, then it gets taken out of their hands and it just gets developed into a cash cow. I mean, you know, one of the best examples of that is Chichen Itza. I've been to that site over and over again for years now, and it's just changed so much. I mean, it's like going to Disneyland or something for ancient history.
Wow.
Yeah. You walk into a whole ticket lineup thing. There's lockers, there's the restaurant on site, there's stores, you go through all that, then you just walk down a gauntlet of vendors, and it's just, and that's what it is. And all these sites bring in a significant amount of money. I mean, the great example of that is the Yucatan Peninsula, not just Chichen Itza, but the entirety of the Yucatan Peninsula is being developed in such a way. They now have a train system down there called the Tren Maya, where you can do a big loop and visit every ancient site down there. You don't build a mass transit system covering an entire peninsula if you're not making money off of that.
That is exactly right.
You know, so, and I think that, you know, the thing that in that video that I did, I mean, that archaeology exposed video that I released, I'm still so surprised. I thought that was just going to be so big, because the stuff that's in that video is just basically exposing what I've seen for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I've left it up as my featured video on that channel, hoping it just gains the traction I think that it deserves, because that is the full look behind the curtain that I've had for the last 10 years. That's 10 years worth of footage that I've put in there for the most part of what's going on at sites around the world. I mean, I go to Angkor Wat, and it's just full construction crews taking stones that they can't move and cutting them up with modern saws to put into a wall, just to build a wall, not put them back in place where they went and figuring that out, just cutting them up so they'll fit and then put them into a wall where they want it. There's no archaeologists or anything around. It's full of construction crews with cranes and stone saws cutting up big blocks.
And that's fucking insane.
And the Sphinx. Mm-hmm. The Sphinx in 20 years, not even 20 years, and, you know, the Sphinx that people are going to see isn't going to be the Sphinx that I've seen. It's being fully encased in modern stone right now. So over half of the Sphinx is not original at this point.
Yeah.
It's fully encased in modern stone. And they're going to continue doing that.
And that's a lot of the reason I think that this ends up being so, I think part of the reason is that people don't want to face reality. I deal with this sometimes with the electric pyramid stuff where, I frequently get people that will say, well, you don't know what energy sources they had and whatnot. It's like, well, that's fine, but don't call it electricity then. But it's the same. People get upset about something because when you say that Chichen Itza has been rebuilt, that also means that the undulating serpent that lines up with the equinox was put in place by modern hands, not by ancient ones. And that starts fucking with people's beliefs, man, right, on a fundamental level.
Look, here, I'm going to bum people out even more. Here's the sad thing. I went over this on my sit-down and interview with Matt Bell. Is, you know, that the shadow that goes down, that was when they started reconstructing it back in the day. It was like a local lawyer that noticed that and wanted to build off the legend of the serpent. The archaeologists didn't get involved because, you know, as goes the articles, because they already knew that all of that was reconstructed and might not be completely the original shape. So he wrote a book about it. It drummed up tourism, and now you have people out there clapping and looking at it. And you know, I don't know, man, whatever. But it's like we're going to have to reevaluate as a community everything that we're seeing. These cuts and stones that we see that would attribute to, like, you know, that a lot of people like to use as a proof of, you know, ancient technology, that they were cutting stone and stuff. We're going to have to look at every single one of those just to make sure that it wasn't a modern stone saw cut while they were trying to cut a piece in half, and they messed that they were going to move to stack somewhere, like I just talked about it going on at Angkor Wat, to that where they slipped and just made a mistake and left it there. We don't even know anymore that some of these stuff, like drill holes and saw cuts into the stones and at these ancient sites, aren't just modern mess ups from construction crews on sites that are rebuilding these places. Because I've seen it all over the world, drill holes. They take stuff like even the Göbekli Tepe pillars. At Karahan Tepe, they have pillars that are being held up with concrete that have steels being, so they take drills, drill through the pillar, and then put steel beams in it so it'll support the whole piece, and then they fill it with concrete. And then that's how that's made. So there's at sites around the world, from Egypt to Turkey to all over Asia and South America, drill holes, saw cuts, all these different things very well could just be, you know, pieces of stone that got drilled or cut. They were going to put it in place in this wall that they were reconstructing, and then they didn't need anymore, and they just left it on the ground there. And now you're looking at drill holes, and you're like, oh, my God, ancient technology. No, it was just done 20 years ago when they rebuilt the site. Potentially. I'm not saying for everything, but it puts you in a position where we now have to ask questions about literally everything that was some big thing in the ancient history community now, again, because they don't tell you what they're doing, and they're not transparent about this because they just want to get it up so they can turn it into basically a theme park and make money.
Testiculate is commenting that Petrie commented on the drill cores and stuff and saw cuts, and that's exactly what Mike's talking about here, is that we can verify that the ones that Petrie's talking about are old, but we can't necessarily say the ones that he didn't talk about are old, because if we have to dig into it, because there's also going to be some modern drill corps out there running around. And, you know, it is funny. I was talking to Hugh Newman, actually, and I forget who it was sitting with us talking, but there was a few of us talking, and I mentioned stone lapping, where it's a technique where they rub two stones together to make them super smooth. And for those who aren't aware, this is how they make precision granite tabletops today. They still, if they order a machinist down to the micron granite tabletop, they rub two pieces of granite together until it's that smooth, and they ship it out. So it is something they were able to do a long time ago. The tech's been around forever. But the dude that me and you were talking to, he's like, oh man, you just like kicked the wind out of my sails. It's like all these things that were in his head. And so I'm seeing the same thing. You probably did it to an even higher degree, because it's like, you're not just talking about flat stones. You're like, all of it. You can't just look at it and go, God damn, the engines were cool. You got to look at it and go, all right, what did the fucking modern people do?
It's not that that this doesn't exist and these examples don't exist from ancient times, but all I'm saying is now you have to look at everything with a more discerning eye because of how they're handling these sites worldwide. And so it's a bummer. It's a bummer to think about. Look, I completely changed my life. I used to work in sales, and I hated it. I was miserable. I did a whole career change in 2016 and then started filming and traveling around the world because I was so inspired. So this last year, honestly, it all started just by accident when I went on Matt Bell's show and we were talking about this, and it just somehow just, you know, naturally came up in conversation. And then it just clicked in my head as far as like, I'm sitting on a mountain of evidence of all this, and I've been walking by this for, you know, close to 10 years now. And then that's how that video came about, Archaeology Exposed video. And it's been kind of a bummer. It's been a little depressing this year for me, because I've realized as I've visited sites over this last year, is I can't help but see I still see the good and the things that inspired me, but now I see the bad too.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a bummer. And I had to kind of come to grips with that myself in terms of my travels, on how I'm, you know, still finding inspiration to, you know, it was kind of hard for a little bit to like not just be totally bummed out. And, you know, I had to go back through in my head and my heart for 10 years of these sites that I've had these amazing experiences at and question everything. It's almost like being in a relationship and having your partner cheat on you, you know? Now you're going back through the whole relationship and questioning everything and going over every conversation and action and different things and like that. You know, I spent the last year going over all these places and that I've visited and taking another look at it from a wholly different perspective now. And then figuring out how to mesh that in my head for moving forward. Some of it's a bummer. It's just what it is. And again, you know, I really want to stress, I'm not against tourism. I'm not against developing sites. I just think that there needs to be, I think there's a better way. And I think it starts with being transparent and also communicating with the largest community of people that are interested in all of this.
Yeah, they're definitely, they've definitely lost the plot. Like when the Society for American Archaeology first became a thing, like 100 years ago now, the founding bylaws, like the very first one, is talking about like the professed reason for it is to bring interested amateurs into the fold, to offer them help when they ask, not to just fucking crawl up their ass and tell them all the time that they're wrong about everything. But basically it was to try to like form a partnership between the interested amateur and the professional archaeologist. And that's like completely gone now. Now it's degenerated into this complete argue and war and fight, and only one person can be right, only one person can be wrong. And it's got to the point where, the more the ego gets injected into a science, the less the science is scientific, the more it just becomes a psychological shit show. And I mean, that, like I was saying about the Lee Clare thing, where where you could see it with Flint interviewing him and how he was just kept leading him with these questions and stuff. It's like, even if a guy wants to stay out of it, put him in charge of that side, and next thing you know, he's got people on his side of the fence trying to fuck his shit up. He's got guys on our side of the fence trying to fuck his shit up. He's got to go on Twitter and make an account. He's like, I haven't used this thing since 2008. And I go dust this off. What's my password again? Fuck. Come argue with all of us.
I was so surprised when I saw him jump back online, what, just a couple weeks ago. I was like, yeah. Oh, shit, here we go.
Yeah, he'd been gone for a minute. Jimmy didn't miss that. He's like, hey, Lee, how you doing, buddy?
I mean, he punched him right in the mouth as soon as he walked through the door.
Yep. I got to say real quick here, to 12 centimeter 32, that's the massive statues that are perfectly symmetrical. Yeah, there are two things. None, they're not exactly perfectly symmetrical, too. We've been doing that since the Romans did that stuff. They copied Greek statues. We have the means, like copying statues identically, exactly. We've been able to do that for thousands of years. These kinds of things, the issue is where it comes, like to me, honestly, the vases are much more compelling than the symmetrical faces on these statues. The vases are it's pretty interesting. You see Karoly Polka doing the, he went to the Cairo Museum to do scans. He's like, oh, everybody's going to cry about the damn, all of the, what's the name of the word? Provenance. Everybody's going to scream about the provenance. Fine. Fuck you. We'll go to the Cairo Museum and do it. Now what? Which is interesting, man. You know, and we're actually getting somewhere. And that's, I think the vases are a great example of what the problem, of how the problem really, how bad it is, because there's data there. We've got tons of people pulling data out of that, making videos, putting it out into the public. People are interested. People are wondering what's going on here. There is no explanation that is sufficient to explain everything that we see in some of these. And it's still reliant on the alternate researcher to do the work. And when it gets to the point where it's like, I was the one that first started getting, hey, man, at the very least, Ben Van Kirkwick's proven that they had a lathe a lot further back in history than they did. And that became the standard debunking argument. Oh, yeah, they just had a lathe another 1,700 years further back. But do they even give Ben or any of these guys credit, you know, any credit for having done this work? Fuck no. They just put their name on it and run with it. It's like, dude, you guys, you don't even, these are numbers you would not fucking have if it wasn't for our side of the fence.
Right.
You're welcome.
And huge shout out to Ben. The work that he's been, look, I used to, when I was traveling, I'd go to the museums, I'd look at stuff, but I just kind of breezed through the museums a lot of times if it wasn't something like really, you know, so focused on megalithic stuff. And rightfully so, when you're looking at megaliths, you know it hasn't been changed, altered, or messed with, right? And that's why I focused so much on megaliths. So I sometimes, like the more intricate stuff like the vases and things, I just kind of breezed through. I never really paid attention to them. And then I watched Ben's speech, his presentation at CPAC years ago, and it completely changed my perspective on what we're looking at here and how important it is. That presentation that he gave at CPAC changed my outlook. I'm never going to be into the vases the way that he is doing it or different stuff like that. It's just not my thing, but it shifted my mindset in a way of understanding how important that is to pay attention to and look at. It really made an impact, and he's still doing that. He crushed it on Rogan. He's making amazing discoveries, and you're right. He's not going to get the credit other than in our community for the work that he's doing. Potentially long-term, he will, because he'll always be the one that's, you know, kind of leading the charge and doing the work on this from the beginning. But you're right. You know, it's... I think they'd have a heart attack if they had to acknowledge or put Ben's work in a paper.
Oh man, you know,
have a stroke.
No, absolutely, they would have a stroke. It's they put themselves in this interesting position where when they talk to their community, the other skeptically scientifically minded people, it's easy for them to just, we have letters next to our name. These guys don't. I say this, they say that, but I'm the authority, so why even look? And this works with a shitload of people in this world, a ton of people. But as soon as they're proven to be wrong on anything, that completely disintegrates. I refer to it as a glass cannon. That's a gaming term, but it's with something can't, doesn't have any health, but if it hits you, you're fucked. And that's that kind of where they're at. It's like, if you shoot them, if you pin them on something, they're screwed because they've sold everything on, I'm not wrong. I've got all these letters next to my name, which is why you'll never get one of them to admit they're wrong on any fucking thing on this planet, which is pretty hilarious to me, to be honest. Cause again, that's like the very basic, the first step in like having credibility is like, oh fuck, man, I'm sorry, I misspoke there. Show that your ego is secondary to portraying accurate information, but these guys can't do it. And again, I like what you said, and I should definitely point this out. I've said it a number of times, but I should say it again. It's not all archaeologists. It's a very small select hand few. I often compare it to like the transgender community. There's a transgender dude down the street working at McDonald's or whatever. He just wants to have a normal fucking day. But then there's the dude on YouTube that's in GameStop going, call me ma'am. And one of these two ends up in our feed, and it's not the dude at McDonald's. It's the one at GameStop. So we get this whole skewed version of everything. Like I was saying earlier, everything. So with the archaeologists, the five that we see on Twitter are the five biggest assholes that there are in their entire community.
Well, however, luckily only a few of them even get any engagement. Most of them are just yelling out into a void. I'll, because they engage with my content, I guess I see their stuff sometimes, and it'll be up for days, and the only comment underneath their own post is them commenting on their own post. It's crazy how little engagement they get. So we can all see that, and we know, you know, where the court of the public opinion is leaning in terms of the perspective on all of this. But they can't see it for some reason. There's the ones that are online representing archaeology. There's a real ego thing going on there, pride thing, that kind of keeps them from seeing the direction. You know, culturally things are shifting, and have been for a while, towards people want to ask big questions and entertain big ideas, and they don't seem to want to do that. And in fact, not only do they not want to do that, they want to treat it like it's dangerous.
Inherently asking the question is stripping away the credibility from indigenous people and putting it at the feet of aliens or white people. That's pretty much exactly what they say every time that they ask what the problem is. And that's, I mean, let's be clear, that's a fucking shallow justification for acting this way. It's you know, that's a pretty big stretch there. It's, you know, Gideon, you fucking show up an hour late to the video. Quit asking questions. Click the rewind button and watch it, and then you'll have something to argue about. Noodle Newt, Jesus, titty fucking Christ. Your parents related before they were married, or what the fuck? Sorry, I'm not sorry. I had to block this guy once. I had to put him in timeout once. He's one of Professor Dave's boys, so he just comes here to try to pretend that he's right about something. So yeah. Anyway, that it is an interesting situation that we have, where like a lot of the information that we use, I mean, pretty much all the information that we use is gleaned from archaeologists and anthropologists, and the vast majority of these people are just fine. But you do get the occasional ones that come in and that, my specialty with electricity was like working in industrial environments or high-end residential, low-end commercial. I guess you could put it that way. Doctor's offices and rich people's homes. It's a lot of troubleshooting. I wouldn't dare to begin to tell a lineman how to deal with his fucking job, because he's doing something different than what I did. Even though we're both technically electricians, he's so far out in left field. He's dealing with all kinds of shit I never had to touch. So I don't tell him how to do his gig. But these archaeologists, man, they'll be a fucking expert in one thing and they'll be babbling about something else like they fucking know. And they looked at the same fucking stuff I did. They read the exact same paper I did. They read the exact same Wikipedia article I did. And they probably had to Google the definitions just like I did. But this is the state of affairs. It's similar to the, oh boy, should I be open though? it's kind of similar to the way we see politics in the wake of the whole fucking shooting that just happened. It's like, I have not seen so much polarized insanity on the internet since 2016. It's just like people are, every stupid fucking conspiracy theory that you could imagine on God's green earth has come out. Everybody's got their own opinion. It's all attached to their politics. And then there's a handful of people that are not, but so many people are just like, this is a one more example of insert personal belief here. It's just like, fuck me running, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. We find ourselves in it. I think that's, you know, the overlap between, I mean, that the argument online continually gets steered towards that taking of sides, instead of just being able to ask questions. And that's, you know, that's what we're engaged in here for the last however long. And with the archaeological community, at least the archaeological community that's on Twitter, right? Because I can do whatever I want on any other platform and I don't catch shit.
That's
just X.
I get some shit on YouTube, but yeah, generally speaking, they're all on Twitter.
Yeah. That's,
I really, like, when I called the archaeologist that's in charge of Serpent Mount, I talked to him. And he was super chill. He was like, I told him what was up and stuff, and he just had a conversation with me. I've spoke to other archaeologists. I've still got many in my inbox that talk to me that are like, please don't ever tell anybody my name. Yeah. The problem is that there's a few of them that are, they're being allowed. That's the big problem, honestly. It's just it only takes a handful of nut jobs and everybody else keeping their trap shut for these guys to be able to run amok. If their colleagues would be like, hey, dumb shit, you're making us all look like fucking idiots out there, shut the fuck up, it wouldn't take long. I mean, if the Society for American Archaeology started saying, dude, shut up, put out a disclaimer instead of like, just try to bring in some of these guys into our fold. It's like, over in Egypt, Zahi Hawass, he doesn't like us. He calls us pyramidiots, but he ain't stopping those dudes that are peddling all the New Age bullshit right there by the pyramid. He knows where side his bread's buttered on. Archaeology is losing money like mad. They're fucking shutting down departments. People are losing their jobs. And then they're like, oh, man, I wonder what we could do. Fucking try engaging with the stuff that the interested amateurs that buy books are. But as soon as one of them does it, fucking Lee Berger did that fucking thing on the Cave of Bones a couple of years ago on Netflix, and he got attacked on Twitter by the same motherfuckers that attack us. He did too good. He did too good.
Yeah, you can't break ranks.
Carl Sagan dealt with the same thing. He did, was like, oh, you're talking to those plebs instead of writing papers? What's wrong with you? Why are you wasting your time with those plebs? They were mad because he was famous and making money. And it's really the same thing with Graham and a bunch of us, too. It's like Jimmy Corsetti talks about the site. Flint Dibble talks about the site. Jimmy gets money and Flint gets, you know, 50 bucks. Flint's pissy about it. And it's just how it is, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's like, it's funny because whatever Jimmy says, it's like they take the opposite. It's like, just because he says it, they're going to take the opposite stance, right? So it just, it allows them to kind of set these moments up for just exposing just how, you know, dumb a lot of it is. Which is, I mean, if anybody can just make one post and get all that whole community riled up, it's Jimmy. It's just crazy.
You know? Yeah, he gets them going quick, man.
So quick, yeah. And it's, I don't engage in all of it, but I enjoy watching it for sure. You could do live stream episode every week just on Jimmy's posts and the interactions and stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It would be entertaining.
It would be very entertaining. I got to ask this question here. Adam, you say that somebody called North O2 a racist. What the hell? Who's calling North O2 a racist? I mean, I get along well with North. I know he doesn't get along well with Jimmy, but I get along well with North, and I don't think he's a racist. He's been talking about the copper culture in North America lately. Maybe there's somebody's bitching about that. Oh, thanks, 12 centimeter 32. We got a lot of people telling us hi and stuff in the chat. Thanks, guys. I'm sorry, just not trying to derail the conversation to tell y'all hi over and over, but hello. Excuse me. But yeah, the it is pretty wild to think that I don't know. It's funny to me to think if I was in that position where it's like this is my job and people are close. It's you have to be they're idealistic to the point of like a religious person. That's just like you can't give them an inch or they'll take a mile kind of insanity. Which yeah, I mean, fucking just talk to us, man. We'll talk to you too. It's crazy. All right, Mike, who would you recommend as a local guide in Kemet? My own itinerary on the fly and on the cheap, not mainstream touring, including Abasur. Dan can shoot you my email for our honeymoon.
Oh, that's nice. You can email me. I help people all the time put stuff together, especially if it's a place I've been to. Where did you say he's going? Kemet?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I'm a... It's pretty easy to find guides over in Egypt. And I will say this, Egypt is one of the few countries where I like to travel solo. I don't like having guides. I like to be able to be free to do my own thing and walk around and do stuff. But Egypt's one of those countries, one of the few countries where I recommend getting a guide because the hustle game is so, so strong out in Egypt, right? So, you know, I'd be walking around sites out there. Even when you get on site, you're getting harassed, you know, by people in there. In the sites. And if you have a guide, they'll kind of run them all off. But I don't know. I'd have to look some of that up. We're doing a tour over there in November and that's going to be a lot of fun. But it shouldn't be too hard to find you a good local guide once you get over there. But I off the top of my head, I'm not sure. If you get over there, have an amazing time. You're going to love it. Egypt's amazing.
And yep. Jay 757 just says stay awesome, so I guess we'll do that. Thanks, yep. Jay. Muchas gracias. I just showed Tammy around Washington State here last week. That was pretty fun. That is not as good as going to Egypt, I would imagine, but Washington's fun. I like it here. I'm getting ready to like I was telling you right before, I'm getting ready to go get a painting and a couple other things from the East Coast for or the western half of the state here. A quick little trip.
We got to do a tour together.
We do. Oh, we absolutely do. We absolutely do. That would be so awesome.
And something in the States. We talked about it a little bit. I think, I think you've got an audience that would love to travel around with you and hang out. And some of the stuff you threw my way, we'll keep it secret for now unless you want to share it. But
we can talk about it a little bit. It's fine. I'm okay.
Yeah, I think that'd be a lot of fun. What would you call that part of the country? Midwest?
Midwest, yeah.
It's got some interesting stuff up there. Some big major sites that are worth seeing.
Yeah, right. The Effigy Mounds in Northeast Iowa.
There you go. See, you already got some interest. We'll put it out. Well, our first tour... people, whatever, big rolling home and 12 centimeters. What is that? 12 centimeters, 32. Am I missing that math joke?
This duo is my kind of super chill. Yeah. We're both pretty laid back guys. It was one of the things that really bugged me when people started coming after you, Mike, was how laid back you are and like how much of a fighter you are. And I'm just like, fucking no, you just leave him alone. God, to fucking, can't leave Brittany alone, but Jesus Christ, it made no sense. Yeah, any new insights on Sage Wall or similar sites? Not for me, but what do you got, Mike?
Yes, so Sage Wall just dropped all their findings over the last several years, put it up on their website. It's all live right now, so you can actually go to sagemountaincenter.org and you can go to their research tab. And they've made everything public that they've been working on. So I've been going up to Sage Wall for the last 4 or 5 years, documenting everything up there and working with Chris and Linda, who are the property owners. And they have done this all on their own dime and their own hard work is gathering information, doing tests. So they've got ground penetrating radar results. They've got LIDAR They have all sorts of stuff, and they've just made that live and public. In fact, I was going to do a post this week about it, and got kind of wrapped up. I'm leaving the country on Sunday, so I'll be heading over to the UK for a bit. So I got kind of wrapped up, and I meant to do that. But yes, you can go to, again, sagemountaincenter.org, and they've made all the research available to the public. It's all open source. So you can go there and look at everything. And that's how they're doing it, man. That's what you get when you have independent people doing stuff. They share it with the public. And I think that's how it should be. You know, I see a lot of the archaeologists with Turkey argue. I've seen them online argue like, well, you want us to release it all in real time? That's not how we do it. It's like, why not? Like, just release the data in real time and people will be paying attention and supporting everything. But yeah, go to Sage Wall, show them some love. Because Chris is, and Linda, they've been doing amazing work up there, making that space available to the public for viewing, and then bringing in the right people to do the research to really start answering questions about that site. And you've been there. We've been there together. And that was, that was amazing walking up to that wall.
Oh man, that was awesome. Just seeing it was something else. And it is, it's the kind of thing that like I bitched about a little bit on the side originally, but like, as the more I think about it, it's like the fact that this has become like the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis and so many other things. It's just like, they're so polarized. It's like, I'm happy that there's some work been released. Cause I know Chris was talking about it when we were there, but
yeah,
it needs done because, I mean, fuck, man. There's no reason to get all angry about this and, like, put dogs in the fight. Let's just fucking...
You know, Jimmy made a great point, actually, a couple of years ago. Hey, Trish, there's several people in here that Steve have been on a tour with me or are going to on the next tour with me, which is really cool to see. Thanks, guys, for being here. Jimmy made a great point a couple of years ago. He said, it doesn't matter if Sage Wall ends up being proven to be man-made or natural, it's the work. We're doing the work.
That's right.
And you're going to find interesting stuff out of doing that work for ancient history or geology and have a better understanding. And so the people that are just like shitting on the idea of doing the work out there and continuing to investigate Sage Wall, I don't understand that. Like, what, you know, we're gathering data that'll give us a greater understanding of that area and what it's all been through in terms of, the Boulder Batholith region and all that's gone on over there. Doing all that work will just give us more data and more information one way or the other. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's also good for people like us to just go through the motions of practicing and learning all this stuff. It's great for everyone.
Exactly. Hey, thank you, Nick, for donating those 5 channel memberships. Much appreciated. Now, one of the things that's important with that, with the batholith there, is that the Boulder batholith, almost all of the work done on it from a geological perspective has had mining at the forefront. It's all about mining, and that's fine. But, you know, there's a different somebody who's working for the Forestry Service who's looking at conservation and somebody who's looking at clear cutting are looking at it from 2 different lenses, even though they both have the same skill set. So when they're looking at this thing and they're looking at where to find the minerals and all this stuff, it's really not going to help us a lot with how Sage Wall was formed per se. But how Sage Wall was formed will give us more information. And I'm not saying that's the only information that's there, but if you look up geology in that region, well, what's Montana do? It logs, it mines, it farms. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to tell you that you go to Butte and there's that big ass fucking open pit mine. The thing's, I don't know how many football fields you could.
Did you go see that?
I didn't get close, like up inside of it. That was cordoned off, but yeah, I was seeing it from 2 miles away or whatever. It's fucking crazy. Massive.
Yeah. I don't know if I released it or not, but I flew a drone over it and it went out over it. I still got the footage, but it went, when I was out there, I was shitting my pants because my drone went off screen in black for like 5 to 10 minutes, something like that. And I just had to sit there and wait to see if it would come back and land just automatically. Mm-hmm. And it did, thank God, but I thought I lost it over the mining pit. But that thing's massive. The whole area there, that's Butte, they poisoned the water table under there from that mine for pretty much indefinitely. So they have to filter all the water there in that town just indefinitely.
I
And the
believe
mining,
it.
that mining operation has to pay for it continuously. So it's just, that's what it is up there in Butte. Isn't that crazy? So, but yeah, you're right. It's up in, and they're doing, this was a big deal a few years ago, is that they've been doing, this was a big, controversial topic, is, I wish I could remember the name of the company, Rio Tinto. So there's an international mining corporation called Rio Tinto. It's like the second largest mining operation in the world. It's based out of the UK, if I remember correctly. And Montana government just signed a contract with Rio Tinto. They did a few years ago. So you'd see these black helicopters flying over the sites, all over the place, doing surveys and stuff, looking to drill and mine up there again. And some of that, they were flying right over Chris and Linda's property at Sage Mountain Center. And if they find big deposits and stuff out there, yeah, they might start tearing everything up and doing all that work again. And now, and the reason why this was controversial is Rio Tinto has, this company has a history of destroying ancient sites. They've done it in Australia. They've destroyed hundreds of ancient sites in Australia, just dynamited sites to make way for drilling and mining operations. It was a big thing, and there are huge amounts of protests and stuff while that was going on in Australia, because they were destroying like ancient Aboriginal sites, some of them dating back 40,000 years. And so this company has a reputation for doing that, which is concerning considering all the stuff that's been being found out there. Interesting.
That's insane, but I do believe it. I have a friend that worked as a coal miner in Tennessee for a couple 3 years, and he lives local. Me and him talk about my YouTube every now and again, and he's talks about the when we talk about NAGPRA and repatriation and all that stuff. He is very, very. He said straight up, he's like that. They told us like we had all these papers we had to read about how what we had to do and blah blah blah. And then we get on the job site, and the boss tells us, if you find an arrowhead, put it in your pocket and shut the fuck up. That's exactly what he was told. Put it in your pocket and shut the fuck up. Get it off site.
Because if they find something,
They'll shut it all down.
they have to shut everything down and they lose the project. So that happened. One of the best cases of that recently happened in Florida. You know, they were doing I don't know if anybody's been down to Miami, but they've been building up massive, high rises up there for years. And yeah, they found some, like an ancient site, shell mound or something, I can't remember exactly, and they had to stop all the work, bring in archaeologists and everything. The
Yep.
whole project got shut down.
That's
So yeah, they encourage people to steal at sites, hide things, cover it up, and bulldoze it. This happens all the time.
It's been happening for a very long, very,
And we,
very long time.
somebody just mentioned John Reeves in your comment section here. We get lucky when we have guys like Chris and Linda at Sage Mountain Center or John Reeves who own these sites and then are willing to do the work and share it with the public, right? Because if it was, anybody else, these discoveries would just be getting bulldozed, like you're saying.
Yeah, that's it's a mess. I'm doing research into stuff now. I was talking to you about a little bit beforehand, and yeah, this site over here that was completely just destroyed, and it had thousands of Native American burials on it, thousands of them, of noble Native American burials, not their rank and file people. This is where they buried their chiefs and their wives of their chiefs and all that shit. And they blew it up. Fuck that noise.
In your comments here, Jeff up north, buddy of mine joined me on a Peru trip. He started this YouTube channel recently, and I recommend people to go and follow his channel. He's doing great work up in the UP, Northern Michigan. He just made a point about most sites that may have existed up in the upper Michigan were probably flattened for mining and logging in the mid-1800s as well. So he's up there documenting and researching a whole bunch of stuff and putting all that out on his channel and getting a lot of really interesting information out to the public. If people are interested in getting into like the history of Upper Peninsula, Michigan, Great Lakes area and stuff like that, go follow Jeff. He'd be somebody really interesting to talk to if you want to ever dig into that Dan, but he's absolutely right, because there's a huge history up there of mining and different stuff. But we know that there's mounds and different things up there too, but they, again, even back in the 1800s and before, they would have just destroyed those to dig into things out there and mine and get all the copper deposits and stuff like that. This has been going on for a long time. None of this is new.
Yeah. The only thing that's new is the, them trying to claim that, like, they don't, you know, they don't do that sort of thing nowadays. We don't do that anymore. We send an archaeologist in there and he digs in the ground and cultural resource management. And then we make sure that we don't dig in Native American sites. Bullshit. As a matter of fact, honestly, like I was saying earlier about the Wenatchee Clovis site, it's kind of a weird catch 22 is that the Native American tribes, especially here on the West Coast, they're so fucking strong. They have so much money that, they do what they want, and they're perfectly capable. Like a lawsuit, I can file a lawsuit for you for copying my beard, right? It doesn't mean I'm going to win, but I can file it and make you go to court. So, these guys, they end up, the tribes are so fucking filthy rich. All they have to do is say, you know what? You found an arrowhead in that site, and we think that might be a grave good. Now, it might not be a grave good, but we're going to put you in court, and we're going to drag this for fucking 20 years. Or you want to just give us that site? I knew you wanted to just give us that site. And it's a stark contrast to the East Coast, where they have Dighton Rock is an example of it's a rock that the Portuguese, the people who are descended from Portuguese immigrants, claim it as their own. It's clearly a Native American thing. The native tribe in that region that has the claim to it, they were too busy. Last time it came up on the ballot, they were too busy pushing for a casino, and they needed some people to help some of the locals to vote in certain things here and there. So they gave them the rock. Fuck it. We don't want the rock. Just same as like I was saying with the Egyptians, they're less concerned with their past than they are with feeding their kids. The same kind of thing. It's like, fuck, whatever, man. Past is the past. We build us this casino. But over here, man, fuck, they've had casinos for 20, 30 years, 25 years now. These places they got money. I mean, yeah. They pay no taxes on a casino. This is fucking better than church, bro. This is like, you got money coming in.
Yeah. And look, unfortunately, I get it. Like, you know, another example would be, you know, I was down at the beginning of the year at that site, Megalithus de Capuli, in Peru, with the giant blocks that I documented down there. Yep. And the guy that owns that land, these are all people that live up in the hillside and everything. You know, I mean, this is like, you know, they're living in shacks. That the family that I met that lives on site there, you know, one side of the house is just, there's just a wooden shack structure. And on the other side is in the same building. It's all like goats and animals and stuff, you know what I mean? So it's very, you know, and he doesn't care about those blocks. He's willing to sell that land. Yeah. He didn't care. Yeah. And I was trying to tell him, I was like, you know, if you just clear the grass out here and keep it trimmed down, you know, you could be running people up here to look at it and visit it. He's like, he doesn't care. You know, and I get it, you know, he's making money off, they all grow coffee beans up there.
Yeah.
That's the focus. So, you know, I get it. I get it. When you go to these different countries and stuff, it really doesn't matter to them until the tourism starts coming in. And for that to happen, you do have to develop it. So there is this fine line of like developing things for tourism. But again, to go back, what we were originally talking about at the beginning of the stream was, I think what we're really fighting for ultimately is doing it responsibly and openly. Right. And, you know, the resistance, I think, that is going on at places like in Turkey at Göbekli Tepe is because there is something being hidden, and that's that the main motive here is the money.
Yeah.
And so it's not, the priority is the money, the tourism, building the infrastructure. And somewhere down here is the archaeological discoveries, because they've already got the site that they need to draw in the tourism.
Yeah.
So why invest millions and millions more into excavating the rest of these pillars when you have enough to bring in half a million, probably pretty soon, and scale that up to millions of people a year to come visit the site once you have the resort built in there that I mentioned that they're doing and all that other stuff, and you've got the roof system on Karahan Tepe, and you've got this major museum? Why excavate the rest of the T-pillars and stuff like that? Why invest extra money, millions of dollars, into doing that? You've got a cash cow now,
and it means you don't have to spend money on it. And you know, it's when the site does have mystery as one of its primary draws, seems to me that, like, you know, you could actually fuck that up. Like the example I use a lot is with the pyramid, with that hidden chamber. Well, what if they do find Khufu's body in there? Well, then all of a sudden, all of these new age people that are showing up to fucking go meditate in the pyramid, you know, might not. Now, personally, I'm still interested in the pyramid no matter what.
Yeah.
But there is going to be the fear. I could see the fear from the people in charge of tourism saying, fuck, we could break the goose that lays the golden egg here, man. If we fucking find Khufu's body here, that'd be good for like a year. But then these guys have been coming for the last 40 years. They won't come anymore. And there's that great quote from Zahi Hawass that I can't ever not use in this time like this. He's talking about Arab Spring and all the problems they had with their reduced tourism and stuff. And he says, no matter what is bad happening in Egypt, those new age people, they will come. This is very important to note. He's aware of it. He knows. And that's his job.
It's a major thing. You know, I've watched people at sites in Egypt have full on crying meltdowns in front of statues that I know are concrete recreations.
Yeah, that's one of the things when I look at pictures of the people at the Sage Wall, or not Sage Wall so much as Giant's Playground, but I see a lot of that same kind of stuff where people are like meditating in front of piles of rocks and stuff. I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to tell you that you're not feeling something, but goddamn, son, really?
Yeah. there's a group up there that likes to do all that. And have, you know, go do it. But I'm trying not to wade into deeper water here. You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It ain't a real robot, yo.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But look, man, I'm not. This is what I don't understand. Like, for example, let's just build off that, what we're talking about right here. You and me aren't really going to go out there and do that. That's not our thing. I don't really ascribe to that, right? But I don't care that other people are doing it. It doesn't bother me and it doesn't threaten me. So other people having ideas of that this rock is a thing that I'm like, no, it's not, it's clearly not, that's just a natural formation, it doesn't, how is that hurting me that they want to go out and spend a couple hours sitting in front of it meditating?
Exactly.
If that works for them, that works for them, right? So, you know, if there's a community of people out there wanting to chase and understand and pursue different means of lines of thinking and stuff, around things and sites around the world, what is the real threat here? But, you know, because it, you know, that's how things, you don't write, get a whole group of people and an institution to write a letter trying to cancel a show on Netflix for what? Entertaining ideas and asking questions. That's all that's being done.
No, all no, it's promoting white supremacy.
Yeah.
it's like makes archaeology. I love the order of things in there, because you would think archaeologists, the first thing would be like, he's got a bunch of wrong information. That's the first thing we got to do here, is that Graham Hancock is wrong about X, Y, and Z. Oh, no. First complaint, he makes fun of us. He calls archaeologists mean things. Second complaint, he don't like brown people despite being married to one. Third complaint, oh yeah, some of the facts are wrong. It's like, what in the fuck, dude? You guys are so fucking blatantly transparent with that letter. But yeah, I'm glad they wrote it, because it's
crazy letter.
It's provided infinite ammunition against them to show where their fucking heads are, because like you say, what's the problem with that? I usually use it, the metaphor that I use, or the example, if your kid, I got a teenage son, if I caught him on Reddit yelling at all the people in the Halo subreddit going, man, you know, fucking Halo sucks. Call of Duty is awesome. I'd be like, dude, what the fuck's wrong with you? Why don't you just go play Call of Duty instead of going and telling these guys that Halo's. Oh, well, then if he said to me, but the Halo's a racist game, Dad, you see. Now, yeah. I might still shake my head at him, but at least he's got a reason in his brain that to go do what he's doing, and he's not being a complete idiot. I'm battling racism. Yeah. So these guys have conjured up some fucking bullshit boogeyman and use it to justify their immature, childish, ego-driven behavior. I don't know how else to put it. It's all about them. I've said it a number of times. Graham Hancock has the wrong letters next to his name. He writes a fiction. They write a fiction. Graham sells better. They're pissed. That's really what it comes down to. They want to try to sell us on the fact that they know what happened back in those days. And it's like, dude, we don't even know. Fuck, there's so many people in the Egyptian lineage that we don't know if they were related by marriage or like brother and sister or aunt. And all. We don't, so many people that they're like, well, we know these people existed, but we're not 100%. But they're going to fucking tell us the whole rest of the timeline. They're just going to lay it out. It's absurd.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been saying this for a while over the last year. You know, when you, on average, have only excavated 5 to 20% of any site that's ever been worked on, and you're telling me that you know, you don't know. You have a piece of the pie. That's why we care about, another reason why we care about excavating all of Göbekli Tepe, because we want the whole story. Not just these guys' extrapolation of 5 or 10% of what we understand about that culture and the site. You know, I think a lot of people are saying that's not enough. We want to know more.
Well, yeah.
And look, it's crazy that we're arguing people whose job this is to do that.
You're not joking, man. I told Jimmy back when he first started talking about the trees and I said, we first started talking about excavations at Göbekli Tepe about a year ago. And all these archaeologists were coming out and saying, like, John Hoops said that they could encase the site in concrete because we just build a visitor center, because as far as he's concerned, they've got enough stuff to work with and all this kind of shit. And it's like, I told Jim, I'm like, dude, what you need to do is go out like once a day and just pick a site. Be like, you know what? They need to excavate more at the Parthenon. They need to excavate more at Easter Island. They need to excavate more at Göbekli Tepe. And then by the end of a year, you'll have archaeologists literally advocating for not digging everywhere on the fucking planet, dude. Because all you got to do is say dig there. And they're like, no, we don't need to anymore. Jimmy Corsetti said dig. I don't need to do it. So, Jesus fucking Christ, you guys. Could you be more predictable?
Yeah.
I mean, fuck. Do you know how easy you are to manipulate when that's all it takes? Is certain people saying certain things and you can fucking jump the shark? Man, these guys are... idiots. Yeah. Idiots to a man. But it is funny because, like, I mean, we do have a lot of things that we do need some of their expertise on, but it's like we end up with, for example, with Göbekli Tepe, there's clearly iconography there, lots of it. Only seeing 5% could well be erasing any chance of us discerning a proto-language. You know, we need higher percentage of those symbols in order to see if this was a language or not. And they don't want to dig there, but that to me seems like something that's extremely interesting. There's a lot of different symbols there and they're not even interested in looking into what they could possibly mean. It's like, dude, you're going to leave all of that to guys like Dr. Martin Sweatman, and you guys are going to throw rocks at him the entire time for fucking not doing things according to the way you think they should be done. And it's like, God damn, dude, you have the chance. Why don't you do it? Oh, no, we don't want to dig anymore.
Yeah.
It's
talk about frustrating, but it's a good fight.
It is.
It's a worthy fight to try to, I like to think that, you know, I like highlighting people like Paul Hill and different people who are willing to call out their own spaces and for what it is. If you're not following him on X, you should. I don't know if you've seen his posts, Dan, but
Who, Paul?
Paul Hill.
Yeah, the archaeologist, Paul. Yeah, yeah.
Past Paulitics. And,
yes.
I mean, he drops some really good stuff. And I feel like, you know, as things continue to progress, I feel like, because look, we're really talking about just a handful of people, right? When we're talking about all this, we're really just talking about a handful of people online. And specifically one site at the moment, Göbekli Tepe, which is just, you know, in the crosshairs because of it's like they can't stop fucking things up and giving us stuff to look at and point at, right? So, you know, I kind of feel like as this, because I feel like we're honestly, as long as this has been going on, the ancient history community, it's been this slow build for decades, right? To where we're at right now. And I feel like we're still at this ground level of terms of growth of interests, you know, and everything. And you know, it just feels like there's eventually going to start being an overlap of people who are going in the same direction, who are archaeologists and within the community and people that are content creators like yourself and myself, as they start getting more emboldened to speak out. Somebody's got to be through the gate first in terms of the, go through the gate first and take the hits in terms of the archaeological community. And there's a few that are doing that. And I think it's important for us to support people like that. For example, Paul Hill, past politics on X. Yes. I highly recommend following him. So people like this, they're kind of going through the gate first and they're going to take a lot of hits. And it's important for us to support them because I think it'll encourage other people to speak out that are in the field.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are afraid to speak out because of their fear for their job.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, if they have enough support, then they don't just get thrown under the bus, hopefully. And they can feel more emboldened to speak out and not get attacked by someone like the Dibbles and stuff out there who eat their own.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Paul does not have a YouTube channel. He just trolls on X. He doesn't troll, but he's been accused of trolling, but he's posting things as he sees them.
Yeah. And it's good to have that perspective, I think, you know, where he's coming from and stuff like that, you know, getting that rational view of the other side.
Yeah.
Where you can at least engage and have a conversation about stuff without being called a racist.
Yeah, that's a really frustrating part of it. Honestly, I understand that there are people that latch onto this stuff that are racist. I mean, I'm not stupid, but that the just inherently just throw that out at it. It's, I mean, that's like calling heavy metal racist or something. Just because there's some dickheads that make racist heavy metal music doesn't mean that all fucking heavy metal music's racist. You try a little fucking discernment, you cocksuckers.
Yeah.
Instead of just broad brush shit. And then, I mean, it's especially hilarious to me because of, if you really start looking at like the especially in America, if you start looking at racism and all this stuff, dude, the anthropological community that gave birth to all these archaeologists, that was fucking, they were so bad, dude, so bad. You still, if you go look for a Kachina doll, a Navajo Kachina doll, if you go look for one of those nowadays, it will not be made in a traditional manner because they ain't made in a traditional manner for about 100 years because about 150 years ago, anthropologists were like, oh, these noble savages are all dying up. Let's go buy all their shit. And they figured out, oh, they're digging in our graves and stealing all this shit. We'll just start making it for them. Oh, they really like it when they look like this. And now Kachina dolls don't look at anything like they actually did. They're made as a tourist item. It's fucking, and there's reports, man. The one that always sticks with me was the lady that was in her 60s, and it was like 1930 something, I want to say. And she saw in the Smithsonian Institute, she said she saw her grandfather's grave goods that she witnessed him be buried in. And it's like she's fucking seeing him in a fucking museum. It's like, oh my God, did you guys wait till his corpse was cold before you dug his ass up? And shit? It's like, you know, that shit's gonna. So I do like, I even when they stonewall us on doing getting information from a site, I can understand where the Native American tribes are at with that stuff. It's like, and in a lot of ways, honestly, that East Wenatchee Clovis site, man, they're not going to be fucking putting any bullshit tourist stuff in there for any time soon. So it is immune to the stuff we've been talking about happening in the rest of the world, because the natives said, bury that motherfucker. Fuck you. You can't have it. Which sucks, but at the same time, maybe 100 years from now, maybe they'll change their mind, or maybe we'll change our mind, or who knows. But at any rate, it's not being poured in concrete.
Yeah. Which places are in America? Chaco Canyon. So it's all concrete.
It's insane.
Yeah, I was really blown away, because I didn't notice that as when I was visited the site until I went back and looked at the footage. When I started making that video, I started going through all my footage going, you know what? I wonder. And then looking and being like, yeah, that's all concrete. Just all concrete. I mean, there's stone stacked in there with concrete. That's how they constructed Chaco Canyon. And it does make me wonder why there's other, you know, ancient sites, burial mounds and stuff. You know, it's like we can't show a level of, or they won't do a level of reconstruction up past Mexico City. It's weird.
Weird. That is weird.
Because they can do it at places like Cahokia Mounds or they've done it with the concrete at Chaco Canyon, but, you know, we're not seeing things done on a scale like these other places. Just kind of weird.
Well, the other places are third world. Look at La Salle Caves. They eventually built a visitor center, but in the meantime, like, they had it available to the public and they closed it off to the public, but they continued to do their work, and then they built a visitor center that's a recreation, right?
Right.
That's kind of first world way of handling these sort of things. But in the third world, you get that money, man. With fucking whatever it takes. Send in those minimum wage workers with stacks of blocks and fucking saws. Let's get this fucking thing built.
And that's what it is. I think if you try doing that at places in America, people would notice and it kind of get exposed, right? You know? But yeah, in other places it's just day laborers coming in and, you know, pouring concrete and stacking blocks and cutting up blocks and doing that. Yeah, man,
it's crazy. Well, we should probably wrap it up here soon, bud, but let's talk a little bit before we do about what we got going on in Arizona this December.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be such a blast. So big conference in Phoenix and Scottsdale, so you can fly direct into Phoenix. It's like 20 minutes away from the airport up in Scottsdale. Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference, so you can get tickets at worldviewswithazmedia.com, or you can go to my website too. It'll link you over to that
one. I got the link in the description of this too.
Perfect. Yeah. Hit that link. You can go over, get tickets. I think we have tickets starting at, for the whole 3-day event, like $250, to $325 to $395 for front row tickets. And then there's hotel options and food options. So we've got a stellar lineup. We got Dan.
Your
man Dan on the card here.
Yeah, I'm there.
And then Jimmy Corsetti, AJ from the Y Files, Gary from Nerdrotic, David Haddon-Childress, William Henry, Hugh Newman's going to be there. Michael Button's going to be there. We got a stellar card. JJ Ainsworth, Will's going to be there, who's another amazing traveler, and explorer. I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited for you to meet Will. You're going to love him, man. Good guy. He's a giant. And I thought I was a big dude and tall. He makes me look tiny. Bunch of amazing people. I'm probably forgetting someone, but Awana. Anyways, going to be a great event. Going to be a good opportunity for everybody to hang out, get together. We've been working really hard on putting this together for months now. This is the first of many events that we're kicking off. We've got this one going. We've got a Sedona event in next year in May. And then we're working. That's all of this. If you come out and support these conferences, this is all leading up to a big event that we're doing in Austin, Texas next year. at the Moody Theater at ACL Live, which, if you don't know, is a massive venue here in Austin. And I look at Austin as kind of ground zero for ancient history. You've been here. Yeah. We even got to hang out here in Austin.
Oh, yeah, we did.
So
at the Liberty.
So I'm really excited about that. And I hope everybody's going to be there. Yeah, Hecklefish will be there. I don't know.
I don't know if Hecklefish will be there, but we'll see. We'll see GI if he makes it.
But yeah, I hope everybody's able to make that. I don't think you can find a better deal for a conference. You can get in and get tickets for $250 for a 3-day weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Old Town Scottsdale, hang out with everybody. I can't wait to see everyone and shake their hands. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then you and I working on a tour. We're going to try to get something together here by the end of the year that we can put out, that people could join us and travel around and see some of these sites and hear us talk and ramble on about whatever, I guess, yeah, you know, for a few days. So a lot of cool stuff. If you've got the link in below, go check it out, because you'll see the lineup there. All the information's on the site for the conference. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. I'm really looking forward to it. The one in Sedona was awesome. I had a really good time there, and I really enjoyed the Cosmic Summit. I just these meeting of a bunch of different people and stuff, it makes me wish I was younger, because I can only keep up with so many people for so long. But man, it's really cool to meet so many people and to talk to so many people about all these different things. It's pretty wild, to be honest with you, how many people have different questions for you, man. Like in Sedona, I remember at one point, like, people shaking my hands and taking pictures, and I just looked, there was just this line of people, and I'm like, my God, man. Just wild.
Yeah. I'm generally pretty introverted. So at that conference, after being on stage and then talking to people for several hours, like, I made it back to my hotel room and just, man, I just crashed out so hard.
I believe that.
But it was so fun engaging with people and meeting people, and people that I still talk to today from that event. So it was great to just talk to everybody and, like, really dig into stuff that everyone's clearly so passionate about. That was a lot of fun. And it was all right seeing your face too.
Yeah, it was all right seeing you too. Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And hopefully we see you guys there. Scottsdale's a lot easier to get a Uber in than Sedona. I learned that the hard way. Don't try to Uber in Sedona, but you can Uber in Scottsdale.
You don't need to rent a car or nothing. You can just go, you can get out of the airport, grab an Uber, go straight to the event.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Direct flights into Phoenix makes it easy. Phoenix is one of the cheaper cities to fly into. And then even if you don't stay at the hotel where the event's at, there are rooms available that are discounted for if you're a ticket buyer. There's other options in the area that are affordable as well, that are really close. So it's going to be fun. That, I don't know if you've ever been to Old Town Scottsdale, but that area is really cool.
I haven't been to Old Town Scottsdale, no.
But we'll go out one night and grab a beer. I'm going to stay a couple extra days.
I'm going to stay at least one extra day, maybe two. We'll see see how much time I got with this whole single parent life, but you know, he's 17 now. He handles taking care of himself for a few days at a whack.
There you go. You can break away for a weekend, huh?
Yep. But back in our day, they just handed us a key and a fucking box of Hot Pockets, told us to fuck off.
Yeah. You want water? Get it out of the hose.
That's right. Awesome. Well, thanks. Thanks for showing up here and chattering with us, Mike, and thank you, everybody. Thanks, Tammy, for moderating that, and Nick and Elminster, and all the rest of you guys that showed up, Corky and Alad, and everybody else for showing up and talking to us and saying hello. And hope to see you guys in Scottsdale. Mike's channel's down below. If you haven't subscribed to him, go click the button, and then come see us in Scottsdale.
Good to catch up with you, man.
You too, brother. Take care, everyone.